You are listening to The Wizards of Oz, hosted by Isaac Egan, Rangor, and Rob CJ.
Welcome to The Wizards of Oz. It's June 2014, and I'm your host, Rob CJ. With me tonight, hot off the phone to the University Ethics Committee, is Isaac Egan.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Yeah, maybe we should explain that a little bit.
So, I'm doing a research project for my fourth year, and I've got this survey, which, you know, if you've seen on Facebook, please do the survey. And when I put it up, Rob was kind enough to be like, oh, that'll be a good competition. Well, we'll give away a draft set and to, you know, like people that complete the survey if we reach, you know, if Isaac reaches his target. As soon as I saw that, I realized that I'm not allowed to offer any kind of incentive for completing the survey because it's not in our ethics application. So I had to frantically message Rob and say, we can't do that. And then message my supervisor to say, this is what's happened. And the supervisor got back to me and said, yeah, that can't happen. We don't have a for that.
Yes. So 11 o'clock last night, I shared that, you know, if Isaac gets 300 respondents, Wizards of Oz will give away a free vintage Masters draft to anyone who likes the Wizards page. I went to bed feeling pretty sweet about myself, and yeah.
Wake up in the morning. The thing is, though, it's pretty sweet. Like, I was chuffed. I wasn't upset about it at all. But, you know, like, it's one of those things you got to make sure that you do everything right as far as ethics is concerned.
So we will be holding that competition anyway. What we might do is, we'll have a competition trying to get a few more likes to our page. So look out on Facebook for that competition to win.
Well, I can make up my own survey of just random invasive questions about people's personality and their lives. And if they want to answer that, they can have a draft set. There'll be quite rude questions in that, and I'll see if I can get it up within a week.
I've got the subscription to the poll, so we can do that. We could actually have a bit with it.
That's what we'll do. We'll just make up a really invasive, like, thing about embarrassing parts of your body, and if you want to click on it and tick our boxes, we'll send you a box.
This sounds fucking horrible. Like, I can't actually be a part of this.
Well, unfortunately, you don't have much choice.
So, in the background, you've heard Rangor anyway. Just let everyone know that our recording has been delayed by about 50 minutes tonight because Rangor's been...
Isaac, yeah.
Isaac was late in traffic.
He had his balls out. Because
Rangor, you're stuck in traffic running around town buying all the Force of Wills. What's going on?
Oh, mate. Sydney traffic can literally touch my ballsack. That's about all I want to say about it at the moment. I was supposed to be home by 6. I got home at, what, like 7:40 or something, and then fought with my computer for a while, so... We're here, we're ready to roll, and Sydney's out of Force of Wills.
So, shall we introduce Rye?
What do you reckon? Well, you've already heard we've got one guest tonight, and only one guest tonight.
Has Force of Wills for sale, if anyone. Hot property.
And he's kind of neat to sell them, because he's recently returned from the Pro Tour. You all know him as Fry, but welcome, Simon.
Thanks, Rob.
What is this? Somebody said this. Why do you hate your name?
I don't know. I just do.
Yeah, I hate my name too.
Anthony? Tony?
Yeah.
Tony Howard?
I'm okay with Tony nowadays, but Dan Unwin used to tilt me, yeah. And then he tried Big T there once.
Before we get started tonight, Fry, you did win the Wizards of Oz's Judge of the Year Award. Question on everyone's lips, though, is how influential was that towards your appointment as a judge at the Pro Tour?
I think that was the major reason that they chose me.
I think so.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, everyone's heard about the Wizards.
The high levels of judges at Wizards did comment that the Wizards of Oz, they listened to it every episode and they just couldn't resist.
I actually do know that some of the guys at WotC Australia listen to the Wizards of Oz. Like, sometimes it's on in the office, yeah. I think.
Yeah, I've heard that too, that they listen to our episode. I don't think they put it on repeat and, like, keep listening to it. I'm pretty sure they just listen to hear what we're doing.
Anyway, tonight we're going to be chatting to Fry. We're going to be getting to know him. We're going to chat about the PT. Later on, we're going to get some listener questions and throw them at Fry. But first of all, guys, since our last show, there's been some events that some of us have attended. Shortly after the last episode, Isaac, you went, there was a PTQ in Melbourne. Tell us a little bit about it.
So, I went, what was it, seven rounds? Was it seven rounds or eight rounds? I don't know.
You were there. And we've got the judge here. He can answer that question.
Fryo? How many rounds was it? Seven. One shouldn't tell me seven. So I went 5:01, and then I did the last round. But then it turns out I had to go to a surprise wedding. I called my mate and told him that I was going to be late to his engagement party.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, it's not an engagement party. It's actually a surprise wedding. And if you're not there in an hour, you're going to miss my wedding. And he's one of my best mates. So I immediately left the venue and got changed and went to a wedding instead of playing in the top eight.
Who has a surprise wedding and how does that work? Do like people hide behind the lounge?
It was basically like once we got there, yeah, like at the appropriate time, somebody said, "Welcome everybody to the engagement party," but it's not actually an engagement party. It's actually a surprise wedding. So very soon we'll be doing the, you know, vows and exchanging rings and all that stuff.
Did they do it in that voice? That was
not that
it
exact.
It was like the movie phone guy, and after the wedding, we will be watching Fast and Furious 11.
Yeah, so, that was, it was a really good wedding, actually. I had a lot of fun.
So you weren't gutted having to drop the top eight?
I think it's a pretty funny situation. I've never been in a situation where I've made top eight of an event and then dropped. I haven't even heard of anybody doing that.
No, sure, it's happened before.
Yeah, there's something in like a GP or something where somebody like had to go.
The yellow. Yeah, it happened in a GP, but the yellow PTQ mat. Because I remember this coming up before in Melbourne, and the guy was like, "Well, I really, really want the mat, but I don't really want to go on the trip." And they're like, okay, so the Swiss standings are you're in the eight, here's your mat, now you can drop, and ninth goes in the top eight. And he's like, sweet, see you later.
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember the dude I have in the mat that I played against, I was just laughing at him, saying, where's your mat?
Oh, my God.
And then he beat me and told me he didn't need a mat.
Talking of the top eight, who was in the top eight for that event?
We have a list of people. let's go through them. Nick Watson.
Justin Chung.
Yala.
You actually have a real list?
Yeah, I got a real list. Zheng Jielu. Zhang Shi Li. That's not how you pronounce his name. Zhang Shi Lai. Yeah. Volta Wiffler. Rupert Samantha. Justin Chung or Jazza. Semi Pro Player Sam Woy. And Chester Swords.
Or Chester.
Chester! And Chester won that.
Yeah, Chester.
He did.
Chester beat Jazza in the finals. Oh. Apparently, he was trolling him a lot throughout the finals.
He was giving him a little bit of crap as he went along.
It was non-stop trash talk.
That's actually what I heard, but I wasn't 100% sure. I heard he was pretty much feeding it to Jazza.
I hope the guy filming it did not leave the audio on.
I would have said
it's that. So Chester for you.
So he gets to go to the Pro Tour now and have a chat with Rich Hagen again and show him his impersonation like last time. Now, Isaac, I want to raise something with you. We had some changes in the points for the Highlander, which we spoke about on the last show, and we have our first big Highlander tournament, and who takes it down first and second but two members of the committee. What's going on there?
It's almost as if those members of the committee actually, you know, are really involved in Highlander and practice a lot and play the game a lot. Like,
no.
What?
You guys are brewing your deck list as you're deciding the points. Right. How can we beat True Name Nemesis? I know. We'll put a point on it.
Hey, True Name was in my deck, so I had to take it out. Well, it was in my sideboard. But actually, when we were sitting down playing, Mulch had Survival out, which we just knocked down from 2-1, and he starts doing some funky shit with it, and he just looks at me and he's like, dude, Survival's really good. And I'm like, oh, yeah. But then I beat him, so, yeah. You know.
So what tournament was that at anyway?
It was Adelaide Infinity Games put up a Honda event the day before the PDQ, which was pretty cool. They had a bunch of interstate players playing, and it was about 14 or 15 people total. Yeah, I played against a Goblin deck, which was pretty cool. Yeah, a girl by the name of Sarah. She played a Goblin Recruiter, stacked her deck real well, which was quite impressive because that card's ridiculously hard to play. And then I won on like one life, which was pretty cool.
What does a Goblin Recruiter do?
It's like red and one for like a 1/1 or something, and it's like search your library for any number of goblins and put them on top of your library in any order.
Ah, okay.
So you kind of have to like know how the next 5 turns are going to play out.
Yeah.
Because if you stick like goblins on there that you can't cast, if something dies or, you know, like you really need to know how the next couple of turns are going to turn out and what you're going to do and how you're going to win the game from that point, because it pretty much says, yeah, stack your deck.
Yeah.
So,
is that a real deck? Because I lost against a Goblins deck in Melbourne.
Yeah, Goblins is... It used to be Tier 1. I haven't seen a Tier 1 version in a long time because people have gone to Mono Red. You just burn and stuff like that. Two of the best cards that you can have in a Mono Red deck is Blood Moon and Ruination. So... Blood Moon shuts off all the lands and Ruination destroy all non-basics.
Right.
So you can easily steal wins with that. But, yeah, like, if you play turn one Lackey, you know, Lackey connects and you put a Siege Gang down, it's pretty tits.
I forgot about the most pressing issue in Highlander at the moment. It's not 7-point Highlander anymore. It's Aussie Singleton.
Haha. I actually asked Lindsay about this.
Yes. Sorry, tell our listeners where that came from first.
Aussie Singleton.
Yes.
So basically, like on the flyer for the GP, yeah, the flyer advertises the Highlander event. It's not Highlander, but Aussie Singleton. And the reason is that, like, the official format from Wizards is called Singleton. Like, you know, anything that has only one thing. That's why they don't say EDH at all. They say Commander, because I have a feeling that it might be something to do with copyright. Like, maybe the Highlander franchise will be upset if we're, you know, stealing their name. No? One should just tell me no. But I don't know. American lawyers are, you know, they're pretty gung-ho on making sure that, yeah, that doesn't happen. Therefore, from Wizards, the official name has to be Singleton. But we're going to keep going Highlander. Because, yeah. Because I hate change.
Well, I might just start calling Aussie Singleton. Just to...
just to troll me? There can be only one.
Hmm. And then the next day afterwards, oh, and so you won Underground C, and then the next day was the PTQ? Yep.
PTQ, I went O2.
Nectar O2 drop. Who's Nectar?
O2 Scotch.
Oh, I read that you went O2 Scotch, and I got a little bit nervous, I must say, because it's been about 12 months. And,
So I did not go O2 Scotch, because Wanchin was there, and Wanchin would hate it if I went O2 Scotch. And plus, the last time I went O3 Scotch, there's a pretty big difference between O3 Scotch and O2 Scotch. O2 Scotch, you can be reasonable. O3 Scotch, you have to be completely unreasonable. My first round, I attacked with this dude. This guy blocked with his guy, and his guy was about to die, so he cast Crypsis on it, and, you know, prevent all combat damage to his flyer. And I'm like, cool, Crypsis my guy, so that my guy doesn't die. And then, like, 2 turns later, I realized my guy was never going to die. So I just cast this Crypsis for no point whatsoever.
What the hell's Crypsis?
Target creature you control against protection from creatures your opponents control. Untap it.
What format is this?
This is limited.
I thought it was a modern.
No.
Oh, no, that's the next one this weekend.
Yeah.
The second one you said was correct.
Right. Okay, I thought that was modern.
Okay. Cool. And then in round 2, I lost because this dude had a 4/4 fight. You know the... It's the 5-cost 2/2 guy when it comes into play, tribute, if they don't tribute, then they have to sacrifice a creature. And basically, so he has this 4/4 flyer, and I can't kill it because all my shit deals 3 damage. At the end of the match, he's like, so when that guy came into play, because there's actually a copy of that guy anyway, he's like, you chose to put 2+1/+1 counters on it, but he called the judge over and says, like, if he doesn't have a creature to sacrifice, like, does he have to put the +1/+1 counters on it? And and the judge is like, no. I'm like, ah. <That's what happened. laughs>
You deserved it, right, too.
Oh, I deserved it so bad. So bad. I'm sitting there with, like, 7 cards in hand, including a god and 2 things that deal 3 damage to die a creature or player, and I just died in this 4/4 flyer that should have been a 2/2. Oh, who was the winner of the pedicure? I know that Nectar. Yeah, so from what I understand, Nectar, pretty good player. Used to be a Yu-Gi-Oh guy. So used to be quite good at Yu-Gi-Oh, and then has made the transition to Magic, and has obviously, you know, done so fairly smoothly.
And he's in Adelaide local, is he?
I believe so. Yep. I played against him once. Can't remember him making any errors. That was my unintentional draw at the pedicure in Melbourne.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, he played pretty tight.
Right. Representing South Australia in the next Pro Tour.
Yeah, there was there was a turn where Juzza was playing against him. It was some epic game where he had Corsair of Crucifix out, and basically at the end of the match, they told Juzza that he missed that he had a lethal attack because he forgot that. Basically, he thought that he was one damage short, but his Minotaur ward pumped one of his Minotaurs +1/+1, so it ended up being exactly lethal.
Oh no!
And apparently, Juzza was pretty crushed about it.
I would be.
Yeah, because Juzza doesn't make mistakes.
He's the end boss.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Not only that, Juzza needed to hit the next PT to double Q. So it's like a double slap.
Yeah.
Because he got a double Q if he got one more, so now he misses that.
What do you mean by double Q?
He'd be silver again if he
went
to the next PT, which would get him another one the time after, so he'd get two Qs off one.
When you get the silver Pro Tour invite, do you get a free flight as well, or...?
No, just
I don't know. I've never gotten one.
Sorry,
is that right?
You get invited to the next Pro Tour that you're not qualified for, but no flight.
Fair.
Rangel, you also attended a big event.
How did this GameCube Big K thing go?
The GameCube 5K.
The big Q. So there was like, the Saturday was a pair of $500 events, which were Modern and Legacy. And I'm the official winner of the Legacy, but I split with a mate who lent me the deck, so that was a pretty good day. We smashed out the Legacy tournament, playing... I was on D&T.
What's D&T?
And Fro was on Elves. Death and Taxes. So just like mono-white 8 bears, basically.
Cool.
So that was a really good event. And then the next day we had the 5K, which is... it was an awesome event, but it was a little bit disappointing from a Sydney player perspective as well. So the community didn't really support. So we were given this chance to have a $5,000 event. Now, like, if it went over 100 people, Lindsay would have just had another one within the next 6 months. And if he hit 150, there would have been one, like, in a couple of months. He would have kept pumping them out. The event got 63 players, and the top 32 made $20 cash. So you only really had to go 3-3 to make money off the event. So it was pretty sad to see a lot of faces in the Sydney community missing from the event, like... I won't name them all, but, like, there was a huge amount of players that weren't there. I wasn't going to name everybody that was missing. Gary's been missing from all major events lately. I think he's doubted up.
He doesn't really play that hardcore anyway. He
used to attend every pop a lot, but I haven't seen him at an event in a long time. But it wasn't, like, there was a lot of players missing.
What does Sydney have to do? Because last year's end-of-year pop a lot event showed that we can get 100-plus players turn up to events... What do we need to do to make it a bit more consistent?
I mean, Sydney's got this huge flaw at the moment where the players, the judges, and the stores don't seem to work as a unit. Like, you go to Melbourne, and it's a much, like, to me, as a player from Sydney, it's a much more cozier environment between stores, judges, and players. Sure, they have problems and stuff, but it seems a lot better down there. And then we come up here, and a store tries, and players don't go, or... You go to another store, they want to do something, and they can't get a judge. Or you go somewhere else, and a judge is like... It seems like there's all these holes in the main Sydney community that need to be filled. Mm. And it just shows when that, like, a store says, here's all my money, I'm gonna give you massive pro support, and people just say, well, we're not going to show up.
Did the event have any sort of attraction for casual players to turn up?
There was a bunch of Parramatta local guys... There was a slight flaw that it clashed with the Adelaide PTQ, which
and also
prevented
Games Day. Was it Games Day weekend?
Yeah, but they had Games Day on, so there was like that's not really an excuse to not go there. Anyone that said I went to a Games Day instead, I would have laughed at because like Games Day started at 3 o'clock at the store,
right? Okay.
So you could easily attend both. The Games Day was actually pretty big because a lot of people. Like, if you won 3, then you could just ID into more money and then play Games Day.
Yep.
So, Games Day was actually a pretty big event. There was some travellers, I get his name wrong, but it kind of looks like Ty Sorensen or something from Melbourne.
Ty Sorensen.
Yeah, he came up.
Well, that's because...
There was a Brisbane guy. Well, he was already queued, yeah, of course, Rob. But, I mean, there was enough money here to get somebody to travel if they didn't want to go to the PTQ. That's kind of what I was getting at.
Yeah.
So, like, he was already queued, so he was like, sweet, this seems big enough money to go to. Like, first place was $1,000, I think. The top eight ended up just splitting it to be, like, 390 each or something.
It's a pretty sick event. Like,
yeah.
Kudos to Lindsay for putting it on.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure Sydney's not going to see that again. Like, Lindsay's not going to... He just gave away cash for no reason. So, you can't expect him to be running that size event again. Like...
How much was the entry?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Weren't you there?
Yeah, but I got entry by using my store credit from the day before. So, like, I paid $10, and then I got a bunch of store credit and some cash, and that was my whole weekend paid for. Because I won the Legacy, so. I think it was $40 if you prepaid and $50 on the day.
Hey, speaking of members of the Wizards of Oz winning things, Rob Jordan. You've won some online drafts recently, is that true?
I love how for Rob we have to resort. Rob Jordan, you won a 3-round event.
Hey,
randoms online, and it might have even been the 4-3-2-2 queue.
No, it was Swiss.
That is even better.
But there's two of them in a row. Come on, guys. Who needs an underground seat when I won PAX? Virtual ones at that. Who won the 5K, though?
I don't know. Jarvis won it with mono red dudes.
Who's that?
Just a random guy with a bunch of mono red guys bashing down. It was dudes, which was really weird, but yeah, he won it.
There you go. Fry, do you play much Magic other than dredging?
I draft at F&M every week.
Yeah, that's cool.
Do you ever win? Because if you can win a draft at your F&M, you're actually ahead of Rob Jordan. He wins Swiss.
No, I go 2-1 basically every week.
Okay, well that's probably the same level as Rob.
I must say, I did a draft at the Games Capital Canberra when I was down there being a farmer. And I have to say, I loved it. The Games Capital puts on an awesome draft. And I especially love the fact that, you know, 7th pick, Master of Waves and Pack 3, and what else they pass me? A whip and 2 Grey Merchants. I'll come back to that store any day if they keep passing it like that.
I told everybody that you were coming and to just take jank.
I appreciate it. It was great.
And how did you go, Rob? 2-1?
Yeah, I played. I remember losing against a green, white, heroic pick. But Fry walked past my table at one stage and he looked down at the board state and he looked at me and he goes, is this draft or constructed? Just had the best cards.
I remember playing in a draft at the Games Capital, which was actually a logical choice at the time, because it went from Logical Choice to Mind Games to now the Games Cap. I'm old. But I didn't know that bribery was something that you can't do. So I would have been like 18 at the time. I just started playing like competitive Magic. And I really needed a watery grave. And there was a watery grave in this draft. It was rare draft at the end. And basically, it was going to be a draw with my opponent. And I said, oh, dude, can you just concede to me? Like, I really want the watery grave. He's like, oh, no. And I'm like, I'll give you a sacred foundry if you concede to me. And he's like, oh, okay, then. So he conceded to me. And I got to rare draft the watery grave. Dave Woe was there. And Dave Woe was like, heads up. That's bribery, and you're not allowed to do that in Magic the Gathering. I'm like, what? Really? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay.
He's like, oh, it's
three blue.
It's encouraged in Yu-Gi-Oh.
Well, yeah, I've obviously played a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh in my time.
Was that Dave Lowe or Dave Lou?
Dave Lowe. D-Lo. As in...
So we've also got Fry on the show, right? He's a judge that we brought on to talk about things that wasn't involving me and Isaac winning and Rob wanting to win.
So we have got Fry on the show tonight, and it is a time for us, I think, to get to know him a little bit better. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Fry. How old are you? Where you live? Just some personal info.
So I'm from Melbourne. I currently live in Canberra. I'm 30 years old, and I do IT for the federal government.
Sweet.
I'm also a level 2 judge.
Yeah, I thought that you were going to get tested for level 3 at the program.
I thought that as well for a while. It turns out that my application got stuck in the chain somewhere, and because of the time frame, they weren't able to action it so quickly.
Okay. Fair enough.
We'll talk about more there in just a moment. So how long have you been playing MTG?
So it's probably been about 10 years since I learned to play. My first block was Odyssey block back at uni. Then I took a big break, and then thanks to Sammy Brent, we got back into it around Innistrad, and I've been playing properly since then.
Sammy B.
Yeah, I love Sammy. He's an awesome bloke.
He's very.
So, and how did you get into judging then?
So, I remember the exact point where I decided I wanted to be a judge. It was at Lab 2, and it was the Return to Ravnica pre-release, and I had I forget the name of the card, it was a white and a blue, return a creature, gain 2 life, or something like that.
Dramatic rescue. Yeah.
And I had no idea if they killed the dude in response, would I gain the life? So I called Judge, and Fabian was literally behind me also playing, and he leans back in the chair with a sandwich in his mouth, and I'm like, do I get to gain the life if the guy dies? And he just sort of shakes his head. I'm like, cool. I went back to the game. I'm like, you know what? I really should know that. I should know how this game works. So I sat down and I started reading all this stuff, and I decided, you know, if I'm going to do all this work, I might as well be a judge and help other people learn this stuff. I went back to the store and James was like, cool, take the test. I'm like, no, I think I'm going to study like another month or whatever. He's like, don't be ridiculous. But I like to be ridiculously overprepared for things. So I went back and I studied for like a month, and I took the test, and that's how it began.
So that was Return to Ravnica. And so a year later, you became the Wizards of Oz Judge of the Year.
That's right.
Wow.
I remember the first time I judged with you, it was at a PDQ, and I assumed that you were level 2. But then I found out at the end of the day that you're actually level 1. And I was like, oh, okay.
I remember some rulings that you've made on my games, Fry, which were definitely going to come up. You knew that, right?
I don't think I could avoid talking to you and not having this topic of conversation come up. I got to say, Rangor is like the judge exam for me. He's where I get stuff wrong so I can learn for other people.
So I'm a bit perplexed now because you've only been judging roughly for about a year. How
about a year and a half.
Yeah, so why do you think it is that you've become so popular in the last year and a half as a judge?
Because he's a fucking legend at judging.
I don't know if popular is the right word.
He gets my fucking rulings wrong and I still don't want to kill him. Few people can do that. I'm like, oh, it's Fry, that's what he does. Appeal!
Yeah, my only out to that, Rangor, was to become the head judge, so you have no one else to appeal to.
Yeah, that one sucked, but still, I got props for not getting cranky out of that one. I was just like, fair enough, Fry's the head judge, nothing I can do now. Yeah. You got me, buddy, you got me.
I saved the wrong ones just for you.
Yep. Have you ever been in an event with him, Rob, though? Like, he's on the show, and I, like, you know what I'm like. If someone's a dickhead, I'm rude to him. If someone's a good bloke, I'll stop. But Fry is, like, one of the easiest judges there is. Even when he's giving you a ruling that you know is fucking ridiculously wrong, he's so nice and calm about it, and he's just like, oh, yeah, so this is how it works. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, so that's your ruling? We're going to appeal that because that's not how it works. Like, other judges will come up and they'll just be like, I'm fucking right, listen to me. And I'll be like, no, you're fucking wrong, fuck off. But
there's no way to talk to judges. No, you're fucking wrong, fuck off.
This is the voice inside my head, right? This has to come out, otherwise I would be banned from events. Often the voice in my head says, no, dickhead, you're wrong, go away.
I appreciate that, Rango. I'm pretty sure there was a compliment buried in there somewhere.
So you are pretty well known all around the place because you are willing to travel. You've judged in Sydney, Melbourne. Have you even travelled up to Newcastle, have I heard?
I did go to Newcastle. I made the very first judge ever in Newcastle, a guy called Matt, who just recently judged the Popolot event by himself.
Yep,
and
Matt
from
Baird.
All I've heard, did an extremely good job.
Awesome. I heard a lot of good things about him this weekend too, up-and-coming judge, Central Coast area.
I actually thought Fry was a travelling judge hobo. I thought he just used to ride trains backwards and forwards and get off at towns and judge them. That's like,
no,
what
all
was.
I do is drive players to events that are far away.
Right. Because I was shocked last year to see you at the Popolot end of year event. That's like, aren't you from Canberra?
Yeah, so I do have the honour of being asked to judge in a bunch of places where I don't live, especially... interesting when there are more local judges and the TOs approach me, which I like, but I do want to cut down a bit on the travel. It's important to let the other judges grow in their own communities.
Right. And do you have any sort of favourite events that you like to judge?
I like Pro Tour qualifiers more than I like GPs. I like judging for the stores. It's a more friendly environment. In a way, people are less... overwhelmed by the entire experience, and I can spend more time with my fellow judges getting to know them. Whereas at a GP, it's huge, you're getting smashed, there's hundreds of people, and all you got to do is work.
Yeah. Mm. I was going to ask, how long are you on the floor at a GP?
It depends what team you're in. I'm not sure if people really know how judging works at large events like this,
no.
But there are usually a bunch of teams that you get allocated to. Usually you're on a different team on different days of the GP. There's the paper team who's responsible for pairings and standings and the match slips that get handed to you. There's the deck check team, whose role is obvious. There's logistics, whose job it is to make sure that everything happens, that all the required resources are ready, tables, chairs, table numbers, product for draft, all that sort of stuff, plus the side events team and the team leaders of each of those and the head judge.
Okay. And, talk about GPs and that, and just any sort of events, you know, how good is the, what do you call it? It's not pay, renew.
Compensation.
Your compensation. I can't even say that word. God, that's another one. That's the one I'm trying to say. Yeah, like, how are you compensated for your time at these events, other than booster, like all we say are booster boxes and judge packs, but are they really worthwhile?
Well, this is the thing that I say to people who ask me when they're interested in judging is you don't do it for the money. Very rarely do you actually get paid for being a judge. I don't like getting paid for being a judge. It makes it feel like a shitty job rather than something that I do for fun, especially when you work out how much you get per hour. So for a GP, here in Australia, we get compensated extremely generously. It's on the order of, you know, boxes of product. I've just recently come back from the US where I judged a GP, and it was less than half of what I would get for an Australian GP, even though it was twice the size.
Really?
So that being here in Australia is great for that. In addition, you do get judge foils. They're not compensation. They're a gift from the judge program to say thank you for working these events. And that scales per level. So the higher level you are, the more foils you get.
We're talking earlier about the judge foil force of wills. How are they allocated?
So they were distributed, as far as I'm aware, to level twos and above who had certified other judges since 2005 as a thank you for growing the program. We just hit 5,000 judges, and this was their way of saying thank you from Wizards. And it's scaled based on how many other judges you'd created.
Right.
And it capped at 4, as far as
yes.
I know. Yep. There was
four,
no, like, you made a, you, yeah, 4 forces of will. You made 1,000 judges, you got 1,000, it capped out at 4.
I can confirm that level 1s did not get them.
Yeah, they definitely didn't. It was only level 2s.
Because level 1s aren't able to create other judges.
Yeah, you can't make judges yet. You don't know how your judge-making bit works.
I've made plenty of judges. I just haven't tested them.
No, Isaac, making out with judges is different to making them.
Well,
So one leads to the other.
So when a daddy judge and a mommy judge love each other very much, right?
You get a pro tour invite. Talk about those Force of Wills as well. Like, not much talk has been about the Elish Norn. That card's sweet. Have you seen the Elish Norn?
It's in
Phyrexian. Yeah, it's in Phyrexian.
Yeah. And how much are they going for?
$10.
No.
They started at 200.
300.
They started at 200. I can currently find them 125-ish.
What have been your biggest influences in judging over the last 18 months? Or who, I should say.
So, I can't talk about my judging without talking about Fabian and James and Nathan, because they were so instrumental in helping me grow and teaching me what I knew. Since then, I've tried to kind of make my own way in judging. My trip to the US allowed me to meet a bunch of the high-profile international judges that all I used to see them online on IRC and on the forums, and now I can put faces to names, and that was really useful.
And what other up-and-coming judges should we keep an eye out? Like, you've mentioned Matt.
Who's the new Fry?
Yeah.
Who's
going to be
next level Fry? Who's going to fuck up my rulings? Who is it?
If you want somebody to fuck up your rulings, you want Eric Papaluka, who's a level 2 in Melbourne, who's keen as mustard and reminds me of how I was 12 months ago.
Cool. I know, Eric.
Before we start talking about the Pro Tour, surely you've seen some scummy moments. What's the scummiest moment that you've witnessed as a judge?
Scummiest moment. Define scummiest moment, Rob.
That was going to be my question.
Okay.
I remember a guy who was getting attacked with a Geese of St. Trap and no Angel Token. Does that count? The Geese was
didn't say anything.
Attack. One guy was attacking and the other guy said you didn't put an Angel in.
Yeah, one guy attacks with a Geese of St. Trap. The other guy says, can I go to blocks? Guy's like, yes, you can go to blocks. Guy blocks. Guy's like, all right, cool, you take 4. And other guy's like, no, don't take 4 because you didn't put an angel into play because that's a trigger and you missed it.
Sorry, sometimes you're saying, guy says, and occasionally you slipped, I.
I don't hide the fact that at PQs and above, I'm a dickhead.
Have you heard of the Levine Trench?
No.
So it's named after a level 3 judge called Eric Levine. Let me send it to you. Basically, it describes the length of a player's career versus how much of a nice guy they are. And you start off really nice as you're going to F&Ms or you're just a terrible player. And then as you get towards the spikier end of it, you become a massive dickhead and try and mize people out of everything. And then when you become a pro, you're back to being really, really nice again.
Yeah. So I just have two different modes. I have PDQ and above mode where, yeah, I've got no problem being a dickhead. But I've had a big think about it, and yeah, I'm just not that great a guy.
I have two modes. I'd be a dickhead, and then I had to think about it. Nah, I'm a dickhead.
I can't really say that I'm a nice guy most of the time. Because if you're a dickhead at any point, you're a dickhead.
you're a nice guy to me. Like, the only trick you tried to get me in an event is you wanted me to go get drunk in the middle of our match. Like, it wasn't like you tried to mize me on a rule. You just tried to make me go drink scotch halfway through.
Rango had this thing that whenever he solves a fog, he has to have a drink. Right?
No, I said every fog I resolved, if I won, I would have a drink.
Yes,
afterwards, not in the middle.
I didn't hear the if I won part. So I just heard every time he
was after game one, there's a piece of paper next to us that says 5 fogs. It says fog and it's got 5 ticks. And Isaac says, judge, I need to go to the toilet. And he goes, Rango, do you need to go to the toilet? And he puts in the paper. I was like, no thanks, I'm fine where I am.
So I think we've defined scummiest now as being Isaac at a GP. So surely, you know, what's the scummiest moment that you've witnessed as a judge? Don't have to mention names, though. That would be ideal. And do they involve Isaac?
Can you be more specific about Scummy?
Are they on this?
I'm not sure. Okay. I'm not sure I have an answer to this question.
What is the situation where you've seen a player try to mise the most? You know, like done something that is within the rules, but maybe unsportsmanlike.
Where have you seen players being a downright prick?
Rob? No, I'm not going to answer that.
I've got too many, and they involve people on this podcast.
I just tend not to remember things like that, because you just go, no, don't do that, and you walk away, and you just sort of shake your head sadly. I mean, you get people trying stuff in every event where there's stuff up for grabs. You know, you can't dwell on it too much. People will be people.
So tell us now, Fry, about the path of you becoming a judge at the Pro Tour. How did you get there?
So it started at CanCon. I was the head judge of the Pro Tour qualifier there, and the winner ended up being a mild acquaintance of mine called Jim Wilkes, who's a Canberra local. He was extremely pleased with his result, and in the midst of celebration, I had heard that people who qualify for the Pro Tour can take a friend or a guest, and that person can go there and see what it's like, and they get to draft for free, and I thought it'd be really sweet. So I went up to him and I said, listen, I know you don't know me very well, but I would love it if you would consider me as a possibility for your guest. And he's like, yep, absolutely, no worries. So the next day, I sent him a message on Facebook. I'm like, okay, so maybe you've like sobered up now and it's all worn off and I'm going to give you a chance to change your mind because you actually don't really know who I am. And he was like, no, I can't think of anybody who would appreciate this more than you would. And I'm like, that's awesome. So we all went out for judge beers that night. It was all the judges at the event, and Rob Alexander was there, Glenn and everyone, and I was talking about how sweet it is. All I got to do is pay for a flight and some hotels, and I get to see what the Pro Tour is like, because this has been my long, long-term goal as a judge. And James just looked at me and said, well, why don't you just apply? And I said, well, don't be ridiculous. They only take L3s and above. There's only, you know, 20 judges who get to go to this thing out of 4,000 or 5,000 in the world. And nobody knows who I am. And he kind of looked at Nathan and he said, no, they know who you are. I'm like, okay, well, that's really creepy.
Well, you were Wizards of Oz's Judge of the Year.
Yeah, that's true. I was Judge of the Year.
And they know us, so of course they know you.
So I didn't really feel comfortable just applying out of the blue. So James offered to let me name drop him in an email to Andy Hecht, who's the judge manager worldwide. So I sent an email to Andy saying, listen, I don't think you know who I am, but a friend of mine just won the Pro Tour qualifier. He's going. I'd like to go with him. I was wondering if it was possible if I could judge. And he said, yep, just apply. There's a special box that says, if you're an L2, please tell us who is your reference. So I spoke to James and Nathan and Fabian, and I said, would you guys, you know, put your hand up for me? And they said, absolutely. So I applied, and a few weeks later, I got an email saying that they were making me an offer. So that's how it happened. I heard later that he'd spoken to a bunch of people, including people at the local Wizards office or the Hasbro office here in Australia, and a lot of high-level judges that I'd worked with around the country. And clearly everybody had said good things because, I got there.
Simple as that.
It was very surprising.
So did you have to do any sort of special preparation leading up to your trip to there?
They said that I had to complete my level 3 checklist before I was allowed to go, which is not, you know, a thing that your listeners would probably know about, but in order to progress from level 2 to level 3, there's quite a lengthy list of things that you have to be able to say that you've done, work this many events as head judge, write this many reviews, etc., etc. So I had to complete all of those as a condition of going.
And was that something that was difficult?
Yes and no. The ones that you can just tick the box are really easy. Like, you have to be a team leader for 2 events or whatever it was. There were 2 difficult ones. The first one was getting a recommendation from the head judge of a Grand Prix as a team leader at that Grand Prix. And so my only chance to do that was at GP Melbourne. And I was fortunate enough to get the recommendation.
Right.
And the second one was to write a self-review, where you assess yourself, your positives and negatives against the 12 qualities of a level 3, which are written down. And that took a lot of, you know, introspection and thinking about what I do well and what I do badly. You kind of want to make yourself look really good so they accept you, but you also don't want to sort of, you know, be fully yourself, and you want to adequately quantify your weaknesses. So that was difficult.
If we've got some listeners that are keen to become judges, what do you reckon is the best way for them to do that?
So the best thing that they can do is talk to their local L2 or above. That L2 can definitely point them in the right direction. If they're worried about their rules knowledge, then taking the rules advisor exam is a great way to judge where they're at with stuff like that. It's quite difficult, so don't be disheartened if you fail the first time. Being able to approach your local L2 and say, yep, I want to be a judge, I've passed this exam, I know what I'm talking about, that will be a step in the right direction.
Where is the exam? Where do you...
So you can go to judge.wizards.com and log in with your DCI number and the password. I believe it's the same password you use for planeswalkerpoints.com. And if you go to exams and then create, you should have access to create yourself a rules advisor exam. Once you pass the rules advisor exam, that unlocks the level 1 practice exam for you, which will allow you to practice for the level 1 test, which is easier than the rules advisor exam when it comes to rules, but also includes questions on policy. All the questions on the L1 test regarding policy are at regular RAL.
Ah, okay. It's all regular.
Yeah, it's all regular. So the thumb or the finger, I guess, is the best way to describe it. But
DQ or not DQ?
Yeah, don't do it again or get the hell out. The best thing you can do is talk to your local L2 because they will be able to take you under their wing. You'll have a mentor, which is the most important part of that. Anything to do in judging, have somebody that you can talk to about stuff and they'll help you out. You have to judge 2 events before you can become an L1, and they're the best people to help you organize that.
Cool.
So you went straight to Atlanta, but you mentioned on Facebook that you said the international leg of your flight was terrible. Is there a reason for that?
Well, it was 20 hours in economy, so I kind of think that speaks for itself.
Oh, that's the only reason why? It's nothing special?
What airline?
So I flew Virgin because I'm gold on Virgin. It didn't end up helping in the slightest, although I did have a seat next to me on the way there and an entire row to myself on the way back, so that wasn't too bad. The worst part was flying 14 hours to America, and you're like, sweet, I'm in the country, I'm almost there, and then realizing it's another 5 hours from L.A. to Atlanta. That was extremely disheartening.
Yeah, that's fair.
Was it daytime or nighttime that you flew across America?
I arrived at nighttime.
14 hours. Probably both, mate.
Could be either.
So I actually arrived before I took off, and then I skipped a day on the way home.
Yeah. Well, it could have been worse, Fry. You try doing that flight, and then when you get to the other end, you have to stay in a special customs booth for 2 hours while they dismantle all your luggage. That's fucking fantastic.
Oh,
that sounds terrible.
Do you have to do that like every time you go there?
Yep, every single time. My passport's fake, so I have to go into the special booth that you guys will never see in your life, and then they take your whole bag apart with screwdrivers and shit. Like, they take the lining out, they take the handles out, they take the wheels out.
Wow.
Are we allowed to ask what you did to deserve that?
Yeah, I don't really hide it. I had big drug charges from my youth. It was something I cleaned up and moved forward. I think we've spoken about it on the show once before, because I won't mention any names, but there's been other players that have had to go to the States with charges who have come to me from listening to our show and asked how they do it, and I was able to help them, which was a pretty good feeling. And then one in particular came back and said, I'm so glad you told me these 3 things because I'd never heard it before, and when I got there, they mattered. And I was like, yeah, well, I found out the hard way when I missed the 2010 Worlds trip based on my visa. Thank you, America, for that. You can go eat a cock. they're just little things like once you're flagged for life because you get printed in America. So even when your charges expire in Australia and stuff, you still get scanned on the way in and you'll still have to have a special visa, which is a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Now, the first time I got a visa, it was only 1 year. So, like, telling players that you can pay $19 to get a five-year visa is, like, hugely relevant because nobody tells you that.
Cool.
And if you want to listen to that podcast, guys, that's back when we were called the Pop-A-Lot Show. And that's on Yeah, it's back on it's on our Facebook page. If you scroll right down to the very beginning, probably go right back down to, like, 2013. It's, I think, the Pop-A-Lot Show with Luke Coates that Wrangle talks about that.
There's a lot of stupid extra things you don't need to know unless you have a problem. But if any of our viewers do have a problem, I'm happy to discuss it with you again because I've got nothing to hide and it's really relevant. If you want to travel to the States and you can't...
I had a manager was asking me about it and saying, do you reckon I should just neglect to mention it?
No.
Yeah, that is a really rough one to decide. So I was faced with the same dilemma and I asked a few people and I was like, they were like, if they find out, you can never, ever, ever go again. So your risk isn't do I get in this time or do I get sent away? It's do I ever get to come to this country again? And get sent away right now if they do find out.
Yeah.
So it's not a matter of, like, because I was like, oh, yeah, what's the worst that happens? Like, Wizards fly me over there, and then I get sent back. The airline has to take you back. You don't get charged. It's part of the trip agreement thing that if you're rejected, you get brought back. I'm like, oh, what's the worst that'll happen? And then I asked around, and people were like, the worst that's happened is you'll never, ever be allowed in. I'm like, yeah, all right, I'm going to jump through some hoops then.
Yeah, cool.
Fry, like, the week leading up to the Pro Tour, players are, like, obviously play testing and testing out all their decks and that. What are you and the judges doing in that week?
It wasn't actually me and the judges. It was me and the Aussie players who were there.
Right.
And I was giving them a hand testing. Obviously, I don't know how to play Magic, so I was helping them out with rules and stuff like that.
There's a thing about the better the judge, the worse the player.
Like, oh, definitely.
I've seen it happen.
I can't play to save myself.
It's so weird to see judges playing and getting interactions wrong that they have judged before and would immediately see the interaction and how it doesn't work and then would interject and say, you can't do that. But then when they're sitting down in the seat, they're just like, nah.
What I want to do when I'm playing is play a game and have some fun, and I don't want to, you know, do work, basically.
Kill.
I remember.
I want to draw 9 cards when I'm playing. I don't want to fucking follow these rules.
Glenn had a... he wanted all the judges together in the store to talk about, I don't know, getting a roster together or something. And he's like, well, we're having a GPT. If you guys all come in and have this meeting, I'll give you free entry to the GPT. So I think we did rock, paper, scissors to figure who would not get to play and who would have to judge this event. And L1 pulled the short straw. So we all sat down, and together we got more infractions than the rest of the GPT put together. It was horrible. Sean got himself disqualified for cheating, but he called it on himself. I did some ridiculous GRV that took about 45 minutes to resolve and ended up, I'm using it as a teaching tool for new judges because it's just ridiculously complex. It's not a good idea to put judges in a competitive event.
So I'm actually disappointed with your answer there. Like, I was hoping you'd say, oh yeah, we get in the room with the judges and we set up some game rule violation scenarios and we quiz each other and then none of that stuff happened.
Well, the problem was all the judges basically got there the day before, and I was really paranoid about, I don't know, being jet lagged or whatever because I've come from so far away. So I was trying to get there on the Wednesday to start judging on the Friday, but it was way cheaper to go on the Tuesday because there was a direct flight from Melbourne.
Yeah.
And I'd stayed in Melbourne from the PTQ on the weekend. So I ended up going on Tuesday. So I had, you know, 4 days to get my stuff together. And the other judges only really got in on the Thursday or the Friday.
Right, so you basically turn up on day zero and say, g'day on Fry, and you guys just get straight into it.
Yeah, so Jim was the only one that I knew of the players. There were 3 other Aussies plus Jub Jub who wasn't testing with us. And we had basically the whole week to get them sorted. Then during player registration, I went in and I ran into the head judge and the other level 5 who was there, and I introduced myself and I had a good chat with them because really I had no idea how it was going to work, what it would look like. Like, I had no idea going into this thing what it would be like. So they were pretty good. They gave me a lot of sort of admin information about what I expected to do, and basically it's just another Magic tournament, so you just do what you've always done. And that was the main difference with the Pro Tour versus any other tournament. All the judges are at the top of their game. They're the best in the world. They all know what they're doing. And so things just run really, really smoothly. It's way overstaffed for the number of players there are. So really, you just end up not having that much to do.
Yeah, it's level. It's only like level threes and above, yeah, except for a few level twos that are like on the brink of becoming level three. Is that?
That's right. I was the only level two. Everyone else was level three or above.
That's pretty insane. Like that's a lot of judge level.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And the best thing is, you know, everyone just assumed that I knew what I was doing, which is good in a way because it's a lot of trust. But it meant that when I didn't know what I was doing, I had to specifically go up and ask, which is fine. And, you know, it's good to show that you're trying to learn stuff. But I enjoyed the level of responsibility that I was given, having met none of them before in my entire life.
Cool.
So what do you mean by, like, those situations which you didn't know what you're doing? Give us an example of that.
So being on the paper team at the Pro Tour was my first time on any paper team. I've only been to, you know, three GPs, and two of them were, you know, Brisbane and Melbourne, and I was not on the paper team in either one of them. So going to a Pro Tour where everybody has been judging for like 10 years and have been to, you know, thousands of events, so I'm like, oh, by the way, I've never done paper before.
Sure. Well, what's the paper team for our listeners?
The people who put up standings and pairings and deliver match slips and things like that.
Right, okay.
It's not particularly difficult. You just need to know what the responsibilities are.
Yeah.
And being a relatively new judge is a bit difficult in that circumstance because they basically just assume that you know exactly what's going on at all times.
Yeah.
So when you say you're on the paper team, does that mean that you're not there to make rulings or infractions or anything like that, or is it just...
No, not at all. It just means that once you've given out, you've done all the paper duties, then you go onto the floor and you become a regular floor judge, and then at the end of the round, you have to take down all the old pairings and get
right.
The new ones.
So that's your primary job, and then the other stuff's here. You just do it when you finish here, blah, blah, blah.
That's right.
So tell us about your day one.
So... Day one was pretty interesting. Obviously, everything was new for me. It was, you know, seeing all these pros that I'd only ever seen on coverage, like in real life, meeting all the judges and introducing myself. Basically, my goal, I had two goals that day. The first was not to make a fool of myself and embarrass myself and the people who had got me there. And the second one was to meet all the judges individually and have a chat to them, which I managed to do by the middle of day two. There were quite a few judges from all around the world, and getting them all separately was a challenge, but I got there. The judging itself was really, really easy. Block was not a challenging format as a judge. There are a few interesting interactions, but everyone was basically on Corsair of Crufix. So my whole judging experience at the Pro Tour was just pointing at the top of people's libraries. It got to the point where if they had any green permanent in play, I would just point and they'd flip over the top card of the library because nobody did, and that's just what you do. Yeah, like, the level of the players is so high that really not many problems exist. And the ones that do exist, you can either fix really easily or become, like, a massive problem. And we had none of those.
Cool. Sounds like everything ran pretty smoothly.
It was very smooth. There was a weird situation, I think it was on day two, where all, a bunch of spectators saw something in the coverage. It looked like somebody had drawn an extra card. And they sprinted over to the feature match area, which I was just there randomly talking to somebody, and I just see this group of players just run across the room yelling about, you know, stop the game, and somebody comes out of the coverage booth, and it's like, did he just draw an extra card? And suddenly there's like 15 judges there all doing stuff and talking to the players and trying to, you know, rewind the game and see how many lands he'd played. It turns out they just weren't watching closely enough, but yeah. It was interesting to see that happen.
No, I was watching that live when that happened, and it was bizarre. They were trying to rewind the game, and the players like, well, it was Wafa Tupo, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was saying, well, can't you just go to the cameras? Because they've changed the rules, and they're not allowed to do that anymore, are they?
That's right. You can't go to the coverage to find out what happened, basically because not every player is on camera, and you want to be as fair as possible.
Yeah, it just makes it look a bit idiotic, you know, when they're trying to rewind the game and they're trying to say, you know, how many cards have you drawn? But the problem is he's got a courser out, you know, and there's cards on top and they're scrying and, yeah.
I think that's stupid.
It
is. You should be able to go to the coverage. Like,
yeah, I can. I think you should, but I can understand why they're not. They're trying to make it fair.
I understand that, but it's not really making it fair. You're saying that you're just gonna.
Here's the thing, like, it's not really about trying to check whether the guy on coverage did or didn't do it. It's about, is it fair that the guy who isn't on coverage has to go through all the other rigmarole?
If I'm standing behind you and I can see your hand, and you draw a card, and I can see what it was, and you're not supposed to draw it, like, do you get out of the game loss because I can just say, yep, I saw the card, we can just put it back?
I see what you're saying.
The answer is no, because not everybody gets a judge standing behind them recording everything that goes into their hand.
I would still give them the game loss. If they drew an extra card, then that's a penalty. But if I need to check to see whether they did draw an extra card, like, I would easily just check the footage and go, yep, this is the penalty. Like, game loss or whatever.
I mean, it does encourage, you know, I'm at F&M, I get my mate to record it with the camera phone just in case I do something. Now we got to start looking at, you know, camera phones just because they happen to be there. It's easy just to say a blanket rule of no. I mean, as judges, we know how to do this.
That makes sense, yeah. Like, if you start, have to take into account people's camera phones or whatever, that could be awkward. All right, you got me.
You mentioned that you gave game rule violations to Conley Woods and Patrick Dickman.
As well as a few cautions to Finkel, and Dazani appealed me, which was very interesting.
Who?
Did your ruling get upheld?
I don't blame him.
Did your ruling get upheld?
Dazani, I believe, was number one in the world before this Pro Tour.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Jeremy Dazani.
Right.
Yeah. They weren't... Say again? No, it was overturned, actually. But not because I got it wrong.
He's the new Wrangler.
can you tell us about that, or is that kind of like confidential kind of stuff?
I do like telling the story because I get to put on an outrageous French accent.
Outrageous French accent.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, Jim loves this story, so I guess I'll tell it. Dazani's playing his opponent in the draft portion, and there's about 7 minutes left on the clock, and I sit down at the table. And it seems like Dazani is super salty at his opponent for playing slowly this entire time. He's just really on edge and antsy about the guy. And they're shuffling up for game three. So basically nothing happens. The guy plays some random dude on turn two. And turn three, Dazani plays Brimaz. Turn four, Dazani attacks with Brimaz and puts a cat soldier into play. And the guy goes, Titan strength, my guy. And Dazani immediately says, sacrifice a blocking creature, whatever the spell is. And the guy turns to me and says, judge. And Dazani explodes. He's like, this is unsporting conduct. It makes no sense. And I'm like, hold on, what's happened? And the guy's like, I haven't blocked yet. He can't get me to, you know, destroy blocking creature when I haven't blocked yet. And Dazani's like, I appeal. I'm like, well, I haven't made a ruling yet. You can't actually appeal me. Like, okay, what is your ruling? It turns out that appealing before I make a ruling actually is unsporting conduct, but I didn't want to mention that because he was, like, going nuts at the time. And I'm like, okay, well, you've, you know, cast a spell with an illegal target. You've committed a game rule violation. He's like, I want to appeal. So I go get the head judge, and I'm like, listen, this guy seems super agitated. He's telling the, you know, his opponent is committing unsporting conduct, and he's saying that the play makes no sense. So the head judge goes and talks to him, and he's like, it makes no sense for him to cast before the blocks. And the judge is like, well, it makes sense in this situation, because he was correctly playing around your removal spell, and now he gets to scry. In the end, it took a lot to calm him down, and he ended up overturning me, basically as a customer service type thing. The warning was meaningless in this circumstance. And just would have created extra hassle. So we're calling it a miscommunication.
Okay.
But for the rest of the tournament, whenever anybody did anything, the thing we could do was say, it makes no sense.
That's awesome.
So I got Patrick Dickman for playing two lands in a turn, which was totally fair. And Conley
it's
Woods is one...
It's not fair that he played two lands in a turn.
It was fair that I got him.
Did he have two explores, or...?
No, he was getting super, super flooded, and he was just playing Lango every turn for like five turns in a row, and he draws a temple. He plays the temple, and he scries, and then he plays a spell, and he's super disheartened, and he's just like, screw it, Lango. I'm like, stop. He's like, ah, yep, two lands, you got me. So he totally wasn't on purpose. He was just on autopilot, basically, because he was going to lose pretty badly. And then he was really nice and signed my playmat after that. Conley Woods, so he played a Doomwake Giant with another Doomwake Giant on board, and then he played a Courser of Kruphix, and with the three triggers, or the two triggers, he wiped his opponent's board, and he attacked into their Elspeth and killed it. He said go, and then he goes, oh, and he flips the top card of his library, and there's a land, and he wanted to play the land. So let me ask you guys what you would do in that situation, or what you'd want to happen as a player. Or the opponent.
As the opponent, I would not want him to be able to play the land. He said, go.
Sure. And he gets a warning.
Yeah.
So why and
if it was you?
If it's me, I want to rewind back to when I should have flipped the thing over. That really shouldn't be happening. Like, yeah.
That's what I would want to happen, but I don't think that that's... I would not expect that to happen.
Yeah,
to just
so,
not be able to play the land.
With my knowledge, I'm pretty sure that, like, it's been missed so far, it goes on the stack on the spot, right? So we're in my opponent's turn and the card gets flipped.
It doesn't use the stack. It's just a static ability.
Okay, so it should just flip over and, like, it should just be face up afterwards. It's too late. We've already moved forward, right?
Well, is it too late?
Well, that's what I think.
It's not too late, but it's... I think it's late enough.
Yeah, I think it's too late to play a land. Like, I expect that's the ruling.
Yeah, the ruling is we can just go back to before combat. He plays the land because he's flipped it, and then he'll just do the same attack and pass the turn. So, like, it's not very disruptive to the game in order to go back. It just sucks that his mistake gave him an advantage in the game.
Why would you go to before combat, though?
Because that's when he cast the Courser of Kruphix.
Yeah, so you go back to the moment when they failed to reveal the card.
Like, what happens when you do, for example, like, there's plenty of times where you go, and then you realize you want to do something. What happens, like, at a ruling point when you go after I do this? I've done that plenty of times.
This is one of the most common rulings that we get asked to make. And, you know, attack, I'll wait. Block, I'll wait. Go, I'll wait. It all comes down to how long there is before you say go and you say I'll wait. If your opponent has any chance to react, and you could gain any information from them, then it's too late, basically. Because if you cast a spell, and they go, tap two blue, and you're like, oh, wait, I didn't mean to cast it. Like, no, you've cast it, right? Because now you've got information they could have a counter spell. But if you just, you know, tap a guy and go, oh, wait, immediately, and they are just sitting there, then I will let you take it back. That's just being a human.
Will you? You just let them take it back, even if there's been a chance for the opponent to interact?
Not if the opponent has a chance. If you do it immediately, then that's fine. Are you leading me into something?
Hey, well, I guess some dudes were talking about, you know, like the invitational cards or whatever, like designing your own card.
Yeah.
About creating a card that is a creature with flash that's called Noble Ox. So that they can say no blocks, and then they go, cool, pump my guy, and they go, no, no, I'm announcing that I'm casting my noble ox from my hand. Block your guy.
No, not block your guy, because you know they're pumping it.
Yeah, well, yeah, whatever the case may be. I would love for that to get to slip through the cracks. I wouldn't. That'd be horrible, but...
You'd be the one with four Noble Ox in his list. That's
we have so many Noble Ox!
What was the actual violation that you gave Conley?
It was a game rule violation for not flipping the top card of his library when he should have.
Just a basic, yep.
Yeah. Basically, Corsair of Crucifix was the most problematic card in the whole thing, which is a shame because it was the most played card in the whole thing, I think, apart from Elspeth.
Desecration Doom is not in that, but yeah, cool.
It wasn't, no. Thank God.
Were there any other cards?
But there are two more black flyers for no mana that have detrimental triggers, but I don't think they cause as many problems because they only trigger once per turn cycle rather than every single combat. So LSV asked me a rules question away from the table, which was a bit nerve-wracking. I gave him an answer. He goes back to the table. He makes the play based on my answer. His opponent immediately calls judge. I'm like, oh my God. A different judge goes up and makes the same call. So I'm like, nailed it. That felt really good.
Did you fist pump the air?
I did fist pump. I'm like, that's a relief.
It is so awkward when you gave the... I don't know if you've ever been in a position where you've actually given the wrong ruling in that scenario. It's pretty awkward.
I don't know. Just ask Rengar. He probably knows all the times I've done something wrong. I had an interesting one where a table called me over. They were on, like, table 1,000, so they weren't in contention for anything. But one of the guys had untapped with King Makar, and he'd given the gold token to his opponent rather than himself, like, two turns ago. I didn't really know how to react to that one. They thought it was hilarious. I decided it just wasn't worth doing anything special for them because they didn't really care. So I just left it as it was. It was impossible to rewind. And the only other option was to deviate by giving it back. But I'd have to get the head judge for that. And it was just, like, totally inconsequential.
Head judge, table 1,000. Need to get this gold token back. Can we rewind, like, two whole things?
It was a very, very weird one, which is actually my second call of the whole Pro Tour, where a guy had Aqueous Form on his Dawnbreaker Charioteers, and he had a Bident of Thassa in play. And I was just walking past, and I saw him attack, and the guy's like, yep, take the damage. And he marks it down, and he goes, trigger, trigger. And he points at his dude, and then he points at his Bident. And he looks at the top card of his library, and then he puts it into his hand. And I'm like, okay, that's a little bit dodge. So I just said, listen, just so you're aware, you need to play a little bit more carefully. These trigger at different times in the turn. And the guy looks at me with complete bewilderment, and he's like, I'm announcing my lifelink trigger and my Bident trigger. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I've just reminded this guy about his Aqueous Form trigger. And the opponent is giving me daggers, like, the grease just looks. And the guy's like,
awesome!
Yeah. And I'm like, really, oh, just so you know, lifelink isn't a trigger. And he's like, oh, thanks. And I sort of stick around in the area, and the next turn I see him attack, and he's like, trigger. And he looks at the top card of his library, and he puts it into his hand. I'm like, okay, bullet dodged.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's so good.
I was like properly shitting myself that I just changed the course of this guy's Pro Tour.
It's pretty awkward.
So yeah, funny stuff.
Did you manage to keep an eye on the other Aussies there?
I did. I guess it's a bit sad, but two of the Aussies had to play each other to make day two.
Oh, who was that?
So it was Ash Webster versus Jim. Jim ended up winning by resolving a Worst Fears. So I guess that's kind of appropriate for Ash, but it was pretty devastating.
What deck was Jim playing to be running Worst Fears?
He was playing Green-Black, Constellation, Strength of the Fallen stuff.
Okay.
The thing of Fears, that cropped up in a bunch of different decks. It was a bit techy.
I did it?
Mm-hmm.
I never saw it.
Sideboard?
Right.
Like a couple of
sideboard.
How'd the Aussies end up, though? Jim, day two. Jumped up, scrubbed out.
I think Anthony Lee also made day two.
He got coverage.
He did get coverage. He stabbed his teammates in the back pretty thoroughly. That's a joke, because he was very nice to them, and the coverage just wanted to write an article that did that. if you read the article, it's pretty funny.
He's like, in the article, it pretty much says, Anthony's like, my teammates suck. They told me to play a different deck. And I was like, nah, fuck you guys. And now I'm doing well.
Yeah, precisely. We gave him appropriate amounts of shit about that.
Where's Anthony from? I don't know, Anthony. Where about
to be from? Perth, I believe.
Yeah, Perth.
Is that...
And the other guy was LaVon Locke, who I actually didn't know before this, but he was an extremely nice guy as well.
I don't know who LaVon...
And Weefan, I don't know how to say his name, but is it Weefan Ring?
Yifan?
Yifan from Yifan Sydney? Ray? Yeah. Sydney.
Yeah,
he did really well too, if I remember.
I don't know. I wasn't really following it.
Exciting stuff here at Wizards of Oz.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, come on. Before the pro tour, the only player we knew was Jump Jump.
Let's get to these viewer questions and then wrap it up.
I got some on my wall.
Shoot. Do it.
You haven't read my wall, have you, Fry?
I liked a few of the comments where somebody said I was from Canberra and Dean very nicely reminded them that I'm from Melbourne.
And then someone said, no, he belongs to Canberra. All right, so John Fro Kerrigan, Mr. Fro, wants to know, he has an Opal Essence in play. He has an Edelon of Blossoms and Humanity, and he casts Replenish.
Fuck Fro.
So what I'd like to say to people who have questions like this is that there's an website where judges answer your rules questions 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's at chat.magicjudges.org. Don't ask them to me. I have no freaking idea.
Fro's second question is, who dies on Game of Thrones this week?
No, don't say anything.
Everyone.
Yeah. Then we also have, why does Blinking Spirit have flying? And why do you attack with Blinking Spirit like it has flying? And why don't you block fly other creatures because you think Blinking Spirit has flying?
And
why is Indestructible Aura neither an aura nor give indestructible?
I don't think our viewers like your answers, bro.
I think they're appropriate, though.
Okay, now I have a question. So there's a game which is like there's a game between me and someone else, and I think it's top 4. It might have been top 8. So it's definitely the top, right?
It was Swiss.
Yeah, but we're in the top already before the ruling, right? So, like, it's an important matchup. Like, it's the top... I'm pretty sure it was top 8. And the opponent's got, like, a reanimated deck, and I've got a spell that can tap down attackers. And so the opponent says, declare attackers. And I say, yep, sweet, you can declare attackers. So he taps a Thrag Tusk and goes to tap a Gristlebrand and then says, I'll wait. And I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll wait. And he untaps the Thrag Tusk and plays a land from his hand. He then activates the land and gives his Gristlebrand vigilance and +2 attack. And he then says, move to attackers. And I say, no, we're in main phase 2. There won't be any more attacking. He then starts to argue that I let him go back, and I'm like, oh, I never said you could go back. I just agreed to move forward. Like, I don't mind if you want to go to main phase 2 and play a land. And so there's a judge basically next to us. So we're like, judge, he listens to the story and says, yeah, you're in main phase 2. You've offered to move to attackers. Your opponent's agreed. Then you play a land. The only time you can play a land would be main phase 2. So that's where we are now. So the player appeals and Fry comes over and Fry decides that we're going to rewind to the point where he could have cast the land and let him cast the land, play the land. So the player does this, and Fry moves away. There's nothing I can do about it. Fry's the head judge. The player then says, move to attackers. I say, yeah, sure, you can declare attackers. And he then activates the land and gives Gristlebrand vigilance. And I immediately, again, judge. And no, neither of them worked in my favor. He got 2 rewinds, and his Gristlebrand attacked me with vigilance.
I actually don't remember that at all. I thought you were going to tell a different story.
No, that was the that's the one with Jens, who later, like, I thought Jens was salty at me, and then later he was no, I was super impressed that you got me on that, and I'm like, oh, okay, and he's like, it was the next level of catching me. I'm like, oh, okay.
I thought you were going to tell the story about imposing Sovereign versus Elspeth.
Oh, that was another PTQ.
That was CanCon this year.
Yeah, I forgot about
like,
that one.
That went in your favour and ended me with having a 30-minute conversation with the other player after the event.
Yeah, that was the first time one's gone in my favour. Maybe that's why I forgot it.
Yeah, because I was an L2 then.
What's Imposing Sovereign?
Imposing Sovereign's creatures come into play tapped.
Ah, yeah.
So my opponent uses Elfsmith and puts his creatures into play and then ships the turn. And as we're going into my turn, I'm like, yeah, sweet, they're tapped, though. And as I'm drawing, he's like, well, if they're tapped, I'm casting something else. And I'm like, well, they have to be tapped. So we call the judge, and the judge ends up ruling, yes, they're tapped. But the player wanted to cast something else if they were tapped because he couldn't use them as blocking. And I'm like, well, you don't really get to try put them in untapped and then do something. Like,
oh, that sounds very similar to the Conley... Courser of Crucifix.
Yeah,
isn't it? Because like they're both game rule violations.
They are both game rule violations.
So you would rewind?
I actually don't remember the exact situation. But something had happened. I ruled that we're going to leave. Actually, I don't remember what I ruled. I'm pretty sure we just tapped them, and it was they were tapped, and it was your turn.
Yeah.
Somehow. I mean, like, if you've given away any information or anything like that, then that's fair enough. Yeah.
I had drawn a card, which is what I think was the Saving Grace was. Like, I was in the process of drawing a card when I said it, and it was in my hand by the time Fry came. I think that's why.
I don't know about that. That's pretty easy to rewind.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
something
I
must have been different
that
we'd rewind and it would still not let him do anything.
Yeah, you could have been less experienced as a judge. That could have been the difference.
No, this one was recent. Like...
This one was recent. There was something about it that meant that he got super salty about it.
Okay, fair.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, he wanted... The thing was,
that
he wanted to stay...
That sounds like total bullshit, though.
No, that's... Yeah, you should have been. Well, afterwards, James and Nathan were both like, yeah, that was wrong, and you were
a
good guy, Rankle, for not being a jerk about
literally
it.
For 8 hours at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one that I find the funniest, because, like, the player did the totally wrong thing, and the inexperienced judge got it right, and it got appealed, and then he did it again immediately after he just got a rewind, and I'm like, again? Surprised, like, the intent is there, and I'm like, the intent is he doesn't fucking know what he's doing. Like, that's what I was thinking.
I really like how I can come on and talk about how shit I am. Yeah. I don't get this anywhere else.
The thing is, like, you, I got told you were talking about it at one of them at a judge conference or something, and they were saying, like, it's good to learn from your mistakes. That's what the good thing about you being a judge is. Like, it's funny to laugh about when you fucked up because you advance forward from it, where other judges get really upset if you call them on it, and that's been a really bad thing in the past. But that's sort of nature is being overthrown now.
It's the number one.
For any judges listening, there's something way better than making mistakes and learning from it, which is... learning from other people's mistakes, so you don't have to make them. So you're welcome.
Got a question here. How do you fix draft issues at F&M?
So this question is going to be from Tim Evers, who loves to troll me about it, because at one point I had no idea how to fix draft issues, and something went wrong, and I ended up rolling a D6 to figure out who should skip their next card in the draft. I thought it was creative at the time.
That's so good.
That led to me asking Nathan to run an entire seminar on how to fix draft issues at the judge conference, which he did, and I was very grateful about that.
I had this draft once where... dude was drafting, and he wasn't the best of drafters. Then pack two picks are going around, and we got to about pick 8 or 9 or something. And at that point, somebody realized, like, I think it was him, he realized that he'd accidentally passed all of his picks from pack one as like a whole pack. So,
I've had
10 picks of his first round had been drafted, like, one by one, and no one realized that pack was even, like, a overly good pack, or even, like, all of the same color or anything. Yeah, that was pretty awkward. But fortunately, he's just like, oh, no, don't worry about it, man. Don't worry about trying to fix it. I'm retarded. I'm just going to drop. And just dropped. I'm like, all right, cool.
We had the same thing. The whole pack was gone, and you know what we did to fix it? It's totally not a solution. We just let the guy have one more random booster that he bought, and he just added that to his pool, like a whole booster.
Oh, my God. Hopefully this event wasn't sanctioned.
This is like 4 years ago. We're just like, oh, we can't really fix it. He's like, oh, I'll buy a booster. And we're like, okay, cool. So he just buys a booster and puts it in his pool.
I've also been asked to ask you about the time that the hotel clerk asked if you were fried from driving.
Oh, my God. So this is from, I'm guessing, Tyler, who loves this story, where we drove from Canberra to Newcastle. We got in late at night, and the hotel clerk says, oh, man, you guys look fried. And he loses his shit for about a week. I really didn't find it that funny.
It's pretty funny.
Right. It was a little bit funny, I guess.
Tell us this token story, Fry.
Right. So, at the PTQ before the Pro Tour, it was sealed, and there were a bunch of tokens and other crap left on the tables. So I sat down at a match to watch it. It was going into turns, and I randomly pick up a Minotaur token that somebody had pulled from a pack and started just fiddling with it. And I turn it over, and on the back of the token, it was an ad for Pro Tour Journey into Nyx, which I was going to. And the date on it was that day's date. And I just idly glanced down, and it was like May 9th to 11th, and it was May 10th. And my heart stops, and I'm pretty sure that I've just screwed up the dates of my flights and missed the Pro Tour. So I abandon the game, and so I go to the scorekeeper, and I'm like, Fabian, look up when the Pro Tour is. So we bring it up, and it turns out they just printed the token wrong.
Oh, okay.
It took me a while to calm down from that. That was not a pleasant experience. So then I took it overseas, and I got the head judge to sign it, because that's the thing that I'm probably going to remember the most.
Sweet.
That's so good.
Sweet. So, it's been a pleasure having you on the show tonight, Fry.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Australia's number one judge.
Yes. Before we head off, though, we have got the Sydney GP coming up in a couple of months in August. Anyone got anything to say about that?
Yeah, I do. Stay tuned to the Wizards of Oz and listen to our next episode for maybe an insightful, exciting announcement, hopefully.
Ooh, I don't know anything about this. I'm pretty excited now.
There is a Highlander event being put on by Next Level Games Ringwood on the 6th of next month.
I love Andy Horn, but I always read that as Next Level Games Ringworm, and I'm always like, what the fuck?
Yeah, well, if he gets 40 players, then he's agreed to put up a Mox Pearl. So, and if even if we only get 2 players, it's going to be a Tropical Island. So, it's pretty sweet.
Well, I'm pretty sure there'll be 2 players, like you and Mulchy, going around with your new points list, just fucking chewing it up, right?
Nah, because like I want Andrew Vance to come down, who's also on the committee. So maybe there's 3 of us.
Ooh, hot topic.
Yeah, Fry, if you're interested in judging the event, you know, you're more than welcome to come down.
And bring Vance.
Thank you for the invite.
How come I wasn't invited, I was like?
Oh, you're not welcome, that's why.
Well, that's a bit fucking rude.
Well, yeah, but that's all right.
You're a jerk and you know it.
But I'm a fucking dickhead. Nah, seriously though, Rango, you should come down. Play some Highlander.
When is it?
6th of July.
I'm down this weekend. I'm actually down early Friday morning, and I'm there till Tuesday.
Ooh, Rob, CJ, come down for some Highlander.
It's good school holidays. Maybe I can twist the missus. Yeah. I mean, not twist the missus, but maybe I can twist the missus' arm.
Rob, don't tell her you keep trying
to kick Rob, the dog. That Facebook status update when you said that your wife said to pick up everything you own and put it in its place, so you picked her up and put her in the kitchen.
I didn't see that.
That was so good.
Oh,
she wasn't impressed.
No.
Do you know how hard that is for a 38-year-old male to do, to pick up his missus? So, conspiracy. Anyone excited?
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah?
I'm going to stay away from that as far as possible.
Really?
Not judge because it's not fun, just as a judge.
As a judge, yeah, sure. No, fuck multiplayer. But it looks like a lot of fun to play. Like,
Yeah, I'm excited. It's out this weekend, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on Friday. It's legal on Friday.
Yep. Woo! So. I'm in Melbourne all weekend. I was like, let's get some drinks and do something.
I have a literature review due on the Monday, so I will not be doing anything. Sorry, bro.
So something's due on the Monday? Did you say?
Yeah, but it's like 4,000 to 5,000 words, and it's pretty important for my...
Yeah, sweet. I leave Tuesday, so after you hand that in Monday...
Oh, yeah, but then I've got an exam on the 19th. And
then I've got something else, and then I've got fucking... Well, I've got to have a hysterectomy.
Sorry. Jesus.
Fair enough. No time to get dinner.
No. Dinner for sure. I'm just not going to scotch with you, that's all.
Oh, yeah. Well, I said food and drinks. That doesn't mean get hammered. I'll be hammered, but you can just be eaten.
Yeah, cool. Well, I'm definitely going to go out and grab some food, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Monday seems decent.
No fucking surprise weddings, all right?
Yeah, sure. I'll easily not have a surprise wedding. Well, this is the Wizards of Oz with...
Rob CJ.
Isaac Egan.
Anthony Hallett.
Rangel.
And Fry. Thanks for listening.
Fry Spiegelberg.
Seaman Fryberg.
Thanks for listening to The Wizard of Oz.
Turn it off now. There's no bloopers to listen to. Trust me.
No, make
turn
sure
it
you
off
listen
now.
To the bloopers.
Turn it off now. I do not talk about my dog.
His dog.
Can you hear that, Kenya?
Yeah.
That's my mongrel dog, which I want to send to the pound, and my wife won't let me for the last 7 years. he keeps running away, and every time he does, it's like, oh, okay, I'll go look for him, and I'll just go for a stroll around the block, and every time I bloody find it.
I can imagine you strolling around the block, finding it, and just walking it further away.
Actually, here's one. We went for a bushwalk once, and
Don't cut him, Rob.
And I'm walking along, and I see this bloody big stick in the corner of my eye, and then I realise it's not that bloody big stick, it's a red-bellied black snake, and it's the biggest one I've ever seen. And the next thing I know, the dog's seen it as well and started attacking it. And, like, I'm going, Charlie, no, and I thought, hang on. Here's the chance here. Get bitten by the red-bellied black snake. No more dog. And it's like, come on, Charlie, get some. And I didn't know who I was cheering for, the snake or the dog. But it turned out the dog
Jesus
won.
Jesus Christ. So.
The dog won, yeah. And it killed a snake defending you, and you were still like, get him, snake.
I hate this dog. It keeps me awake. It wrecks my yard. It's a mongrel of a thing. But anyway, yeah. Cut all that out, John.
Fucking put that up.
Yeah, that's
then,
going in the.
And then
John
when he asks you to put it down, we'll fucking mention it every podcast from then on.
Yeah. Rob tries to kill his dog.
I get in. I was just rooting for the snake. Because the dog chased it in the bush and it was gone so far into the bush that I couldn't even hear him barking anymore. And when there was silence, I'm thinking, did the snake get him? And I'm standing there waiting. I'm stood around for about 10 minutes, and then it came back. So.